Let's say your small business has a problem. Like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. We are going to be talking about the Illinois victory over Oakland, 64-53. We'll be joined by Kedrick Prince and Brad Sturdy. This is Mike Kegley. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back after these messages. Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by broadcasting on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. We have over 20 stations, including stations in Chicago, St. Louis, Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, the Quad Cities, Rockford, Peoria, Marion, Quincy, and Jacksonville, amongst others. You can reach over 11 million people in the state of Illinois by partnering with us. Send me an email, mike@IlliniGuys.com, and let's find a way that we can build your business together. This is Mike Kegley. I'm here with Kedrick Prince. We'll have Brad Sturdy stop in with us as well. We are here to talk about the Illini's 64-53 win over Oakland in a game that really was pretty tight. And then it seemed like Illinois just literally put the screws to Oakland on defense. And that was kind of the end of it for them, as Illinois closed out really tough and down the stretch just kind of swatted Oakland aside and goes away with an 11-point victory, but probably was a little more. There was a long three-pointer, and, you get a little bit there at the end of the game, easing up a little bit. But, Ked, what did you think of the game, particularly, from where the team started versus how they finished up?
Some concerns, I mean, all week. And I'm not, if anybody follows me on Twitter, I mean, I said it all week. I knew this was going to be a tough game. I knew this wasn't going to be easy. I watched them play Ohio State. I know the way Illinois plays, and I put on my coaching hat, and I scouted my behind off and thought, if Illinois walk out here today and play sleep, there's a chance they're going to get beat. And they were really lucky to win the game. At the end of the day, it's all about winning. I get that part, but it was 8-0 right away, I think, or something like that, so it was a game of emotions for me. They came out, I don't want to say flat, but Oakland came out, throwing the first blow, and Underwood called timeout, and it was a chess match, I think. Sitting in a press row was kind of unique, because I heard Coach Greg talk about, we're just going to punish him inside. They knew they didn't have anybody to guard him, but then when the game was over, he gave the game ball to Quincy Guerriere, because he thought he was the reason that they stepped up, and he had a double-double. So it was a game of runs and emotions, but it was a game that I knew Illinois was not going to just walk in there and walk over them.
Yeah, Townsend was on quite a roll, and then Guerriere really shut the door on him late in the second half. And I thought that was probably the key thing is, when he was their go-to guy, and all of a sudden they couldn't get anything out of him. At the same time, you had Shannon Jr. literally putting handcuffs on Golkey, and Lampman was also struggling, and then they had nowhere to go, and Illinois kind of popped that game open, when they ended up putting those handcuffs on.
That was a very, very good defensive performance. When I said it was a game of runs and mixed bag for me, that's what I meant, because the coach flat out said that Terrence Shannon and Ty Rogers, just big and physical guys, and that they made it tough for their guards to get looks. And Terrence Shannon told us in the press conference, you know, he told you know, anybody he guarded from Oakland, basically, you're going to earn every shot you get. And that's tough because Terrence was still able to get his offense. I don't think Illinois fans really understand, you know, how lucky they are to have him, because this kid's a complete player. He defends as well as anybody else, and I have to give him credit. You know, when he went to the NBA combines, I've said this before, he's really taken, you know, a nice approach to what they're telling him and what he needs to work on. He looks like a different player, and I like, you know, what he adds. And you know, he got really frustrated one time because he wanted to throw the ball to Dane and guys missed him. So he's becoming more of a vocal leader as well.
Yeah, and I thought there was, you know, the team ended up with 13 assists. And down the stretch, I thought Hawkins was really playing much better from a team standpoint. Even had a couple of assists that were in the paint that guys, Guerrier missed a couple layups off of Hawkins passes, and maybe even Dane missed one. But I mean, I thought the team was moving the ball much better. And I thought Terrence Shannon, when he got into the lane, you know, would make the pass to the open man instead of maybe the acrobatic layup that we know he can make. And to me, that was a big point of what we need from this team, is to be a little bit selfless and get it to the open man.
You know, a lot of fans, you know, we're kind of tough on Coleman. I don't think that's fair, and I'm going to tell you why I don't think it's fair. You know, he wasn't just shooting threes, and I think that's what a lot of people want. But look at his stat line. I believe it was 8 points, 8 rebounds or something like that. And he had 5 assists. He may have led the team in assists, I believe. So that's a Coleman Hawkins. But I think when people just revert back to the Kansas game and think that's who he is, and that's just not his game. You know, but if he's on, he's going to shoot it. I, you know, they still need him, you know, defensively, you know, and he's still running the offense. You know, he's a nice player, and Illinois, you know, they're not going to win without him. I'm just going to put it out there, you know, and I know Brad is, he's fully aware of that.
Yeah. And I thought that, you know, the concerns I have, I guess we'll kind of talk a little bit about that. The concerns I have is I would like to see Luke Goody get a few more shots, and you know, they need to either get him open or he needs to be a little bit quicker on the trigger, you know. And I also really, you know, Domask played okay today. I'd like to see him knock down some more threes, but more importantly, I guess the shooting 50% of the free throw line. I know Coach Underwood had to feel as frustrated as Coach Izzo, you know, after the Michigan State loss. Izzo came out and basically said, I don't know what to tell you. They made their free throws in practice, you know, last night fantastically, and they just didn't do anything like that in the game. And I wonder if that's a little bit of how Coach Underwood feels, because if this team is truly a 25% shooting team from the 3-point line and a 50% free throw shooting team, boy, that's tough to win in the Big Ten with those two statistics.
Well, let me start with Luke Goody. I think Luke played like a coach tonight. I don't know what the, you know, the television angle was, but he was doing a lot of coaching, and I agree with you. I think Luke needs more shots, and I think tonight was the first time, you know, I've seen Marcus Domask. I think he was aiming it. That defense was tough. It was frustrating. Brad, you know, was really careful in the words that he used, how he described it, other than it being a junk defense, and he's glad he'll have to see, hopefully never see it again. But Luke was – he had opportunities, but I don't think he was in – position to shoot it. I don't think he was, like you mentioned, ready to catch and shoot, because they close out. They made it tough. That's why I don't think Coleman shot a lot of threes, to be honest with you. The other part, though, I do have some concerns. The free throw thing is a concern for me. You know, and, you know, again, I'm not asking people to follow me on Twitter, but I just did, you know, tweet that part out about Brad Underwood making a comment. You know, hell, they make them. They practice them all the time. You know, and the bottom line is they have to man up and step up and make them. Yeah, there's 16,000 people in there, but you got to make free throws. You know, and Coach Greg talked about that. That was those Quincy Guerrero's two free throws. He thought before he made those free throws, they still had a chance to win because he knew they didn't shoot free throws well and they didn't shoot three well. He said that. But if they don't fix this, it will be a long season. They'll win some games just because they're better, taller, and older, and that more athletic. But being when you go to Tennessee on the road, you do that, that's a recipe for L.
Yeah, and you know, Marquette will be a tough game. I mean, there's a lot of tough teams, although I do think this team tends to get up for and they play the level that they're against, which is a good thing. You know, but, you know, it's ultimately you've got to be able to shoot. And that's the concern, I think, that people have is really, really, you know, wanting to see a little bit more there to get your confidence up for the rest of the year. I thought that they played a little better off the boards. It seemed like the one thing Oakland did was they really did a nice job of making sure that guys went to spots, almost always had a guy in front of the rim and on either side on defense. And that's good coaching.
You know what? I'm going to say this. I know a lot of fans are kind of comfortable, but I personally thought Coach Underwood did one of his better jobs coaching tonight. I think he pulled the right substitution patterns. I think he was really, really great with the kids. I think the offense that he ran, the thing you, and I mean, I'm going to make if I can make sure I put it on our Line Eye Guys YouTube page, Coach Greg from Oakland talked about how Underwood really studied the game film. He knows that you cannot ball screen their defense. Ohio State kept doing it, and that's why they were in the game, he said. Brad Underwood, he left the press conference telling Illinois fans, you got a good coach here because he scouted them. Most coaches that they play against at the Power 5 level think that you can continue to screen it, and Underwood didn't do that. Got the ball at the high post, and they had looks. I think some of the players, you know, Moore, Coleman, and Chance had tunnel vision. There was passes open on the weak side and on short corner on the baseline, but they missed them. But anyway, point being, I do think this is one of Coach Underwood's better coaching jobs because they didn't panic against the zone, and everybody thinks you can screen, ball screen the zone. That was a 1-3-1 matchup, flat 2-3. Then at one point in time, I have not seen a 2-1-2 zone since the 70s. They did that a couple times.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I was a master of the junk zones, and when we played AAU, and I felt there was like a lot of fun things going on there. We've got Brad Sturdy, as promised, has jumped in after the game. Brad, what are your general thoughts coming out of this tough game against an opponent who looked like they came here to win, not just to come and look around the State Farm Center and you know, get all amazed at a Big Ten stadium?
Well, Greg Campy, the way he does it, they play against elite competition. That's what they want to do in the non-conference. And yeah, they're bye games in the sense it's going to make money for their program. But at the same time, he understands that this preps them for their conference play, and they're, you know, that's what they have to do. They have to win in their conference, and he understands that. I really think that Illinois showed what they can do defensively. They're fantastic when they really sit down and guard, and when they have the right guys on the floor. And you know, yeah, they did. You know, I heard Ked mention that, you know, they got some good looks, and I totally agree. They had a lot of good clean looks, not only from three, but also they got balls in the paint at the rim, and they missed a lot of layups. They missed dunk. They missed. And, you know, when you're missing those shots, it becomes mental. And then they start hesitating a little bit when they had open shots. And the next thing you know, now the one thing he did mention that I totally agree with was they missed some open guys too.
Mm-hmm.
There was some backside plays, and you know, whether it's, you know, and I don't think Illinois wanted to show, you know, every single they haven't run enough. They've worked on this against the zone for 2 days, so there's only so many things you draw up and dial up in 2 days of prep. So, you know, as you get later in the season, you'll see them against a team like that There are backdoor lobs that were open, ways to, you know, screen away from the ball, you know, backside screens, you know, to, you know, get the guy that kind of that diagonal pass and the lob and maybe threes up penetration. That's the one area I think offensively where Illinois does struggle is dribbling to pass. And they don't have – they're getting better than they were a year ago. But their guys get in the paint and they – it's usually to shoot where they don't make the – you know, they struggle to make the right pass. You know, we've talked about point guard issues. But I saw in the second half when they start getting in the paint and making those passes where they dump down to the big guy – where there are kickouts and ball reversals, you see a little bit more offensively, and that's when they're going to be good. And, you know, that this is a, like they say, like Campy said, we defend pretty well, but we do it kind of in a goofy manner, and they just get up and guard you. And that's a really great way to describe it.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, as we've all coached quite a bit, you know, if you can get the ball or, you know, in the circle around the free throw, against the zone, generally they're going to be in trouble. And Coleman Hawkins did a nice job of moving the ball in there. And I think, you know, Luke Goody also did a good job. At least they had certain plays. And I think the more Illinois can do something like that against the zone, the better they're going to be. I think they played okay against a zone that kind of changed its look. I mean, it was interesting. You know, the 2-1-2, 1-3-1, 2-3-3-2 at times. It was fun to watch it kind of morph as depending on where the ball was. So
yeah, like I said, it's really like a matchup is what it is. Exactly. And so they match up with whatever you put a one guard front, they're going to be in a 1-3-1. You put a two guard front, they flatten out into a 2-3-3-2, 2-1-2, like Ken said. That 2-1-2 was pretty funny to see, that like two guys out front, one guy at the high post and two guys down low. So yeah, it's very interesting to watch the way he does it, and it's tough because nobody else plays that. I mean, Illinois won't see that in the Big Ten. You know, occasionally, you remember, you know, Northwestern used to run a little something similar when Carmody was there. You know, like they called it the moan. It was a man zone.
Yeah, well, you know, it is funny because we used to do that when I coached the War Eagles. We would do a 1-3-1, and we'd try to match that up, and then we'd do a 2-3, and then we'd switch it to a 3-2. You know, depending on, like you said, where the ball, what the ball was. And it was fun because you could make teams not know exactly what you were into. And then they played a half step slow, which is exactly what we needed.
Yeah. And especially in a 30 second shot clock.
Right.
Because you don't have time. When you don't have a shot clock, you could pass around there and eventually they're going to break down. 30 seconds, you know, you get a couple ball reversals. That's about it. All you're going to get in 30 seconds.
Yeah. No, that is so true. That is so true. So you're looking out there as a coach. You saw this game. Team played well, came from behind. What are the things? Who are you going to be working with that you want to, you know, get them to elevate their game? You know, who's going to be highest on your list there, Brad? And we'll go over to Ked.
Well, I thought the first half, I thought Coleman Hawkins really struggled. And then at the end of the first half, he came on, and then the second half, he played really well, and he finished with 8 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. And, you know, most of the turnovers were early. He had, like, one late. But, I mean, you saw a guy who really – I think he's the key. I think he might be the key to this team, because when he's really good, like he was late, they run away. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And things like that. I also thought Quincy Guerrier was fantastic. But I think the guy they have to get going – they have to get either Marcus DeMosk or Luke Goody going from behind the arc. They aren't shooting the ball well, and they're better than that. And you know those guys are proven shooters, and they have to find a way to get them a couple clean looks maybe early and run a set play to get them some action so that they can get their, you know, get a clean look. I think that Marquette's going to be different because, you know, it's a different matchup, but you're going to see them trying to apply more pressure. It's not going to be sit back and pack it in, and it's going to be different. And I think that suits Illinois a little better because they're able to get to the basket. You know, I mean, Terrence Shannon can get to the basket against basically anybody who's guarding him. So I think those are the guys. I think they have to get more from those two guys, from Goody and DeMosk, shooting the ball. I think DeMosk plays a good floor game. He does a lot of really good things. But they need somebody to make the outside shots. So I think that would be my focus right there, is just we got to find a way to get those guys involved from the perimeter to open up things for everyone else.
I guess for me, I would say not just Domask and Goody. I think as a team, because they've not really shot it well. Terrence Shannon has been pretty solid, you know, but to me, moving forward with the team, I'm concerned about the free throw shooting. I am, because we can sit here, we've all played, the three of us, and hopefully all of our, you know, 1 million listeners listening to this lovely podcast. When you miss a couple shots, like Brad mentioned, it becomes mental. And I think, you know, I know those players are thinking, here we go, Terrence missing free throws. You know, I'm sitting next to a guy, and I feel bad, but when Dan Danger got fouled and, you know, everybody started cheering, I said, it's a turnover. Missed two free throws, that's a turnover. You have to get better at that. And there's, you know, I don't want anybody just asking, do they practice them? Yes, it's a mental thing. And there was one time tonight, Dane changed his free throw shooting twice. That tells you that it's mental, because anybody knows if you coach and play, same routine when you walk up there. So that's a big, huge concern for me moving forward.
Yeah, I think the free throw shooting is definitely one you don't want to let it get too far out of whack. And of course, Brad, we talked about how frustrated Tom Izzo was with a team that shoots free throws in practice, but not in games. In terms of the bench play, you know, Gibbs LaHorne came out and didn't score today, but he also didn't put up so many crazy shots either. Is that a sign that he's getting a little bit of that education and kind of understands his role and the fact that, you know, everything's not about how many points you score?
Well, I think it's more of a sign he didn't know what to do against that defense either. but no, I do think, you know, he had a nice little pull up jump shot. He yep. missed it, but it was a good shot. He didn't force things. He got in the paint. He tried to kick. He's really growing and learning. I think just you can't put expectations for him to score like 18 points a game. It's not going to happen. But he's a valuable piece. And I'll tell you, when teams play man to man, he's more valuable because he can get downhill. Also, in an up-tempo game, he can get it out and attack the basket on the rim. And in Oakland, they talked about after the game. They like to play fast. But they looked at Illinois and said, if we run, like Campy said, if we run with them, we're going to lose 100-60. You know, I mean, that's just the reality. So we might score a few more points, but we're going to get beat by 30 or 40 points. And that's where I think that you have to understand that, you know, so that's where he's got to kind of develop in the half court game. You know, he's really good when he can get out, when he can push it, get and run, or when it's against man to man where he can just take a guy off the bounce because he's a freak athlete. So yeah, I think it's growing and learning, but I like the way he looked to a certain extent. I would have liked to see Moretti against that zone a little bit because he's such a good passer. And I think he could have found some openings there, but you know, it is what it is. I'm not sure on the defensive end, you give up a lot, then you would have had you know, give up an open three. Maybe it's not worth it to put a guy like that out there.
No, I agree with you. And Brad, you know, and the one thing I will give Draymond credit for, he has really worked hard on defense. I thought he put a lot of effort out there defensively. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are kind of, I don't want to say they're being negative, but it's not that bad. I mean, he does a really good job of fighting over ball screens. He's athletic enough and smart enough, and he uses his body and his good footwork when it comes to fighting over the top of screens. I mean, I've not seen him get torched yet by anybody. Yeah, a few people are going to score on him. But, you know, from an offensive standpoint, I was impressed because he didn't just shoot a lot either. Because this kid has the capability or the mindset. He walks in the gym, he's open. So tonight was a sign of growth for me.
Yeah, and I think there was – I think the bottom line is they did, you know, turn it on in the end. And did Coach Underwood mention anything about the intensity? I mean, that last, I don't know, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever it was of the second half, that was about as good as defensive output. I mean, that would rank up there with anything last year.
Yeah, Mike, they got 11 consecutive stops before the guy threw in the three at the end of the game on the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
So basically 11 straight stops when you're at winning time. That's how you win. I mean, that's you pull away. And that's what they were able to do. It's really, really impressive defensively. I thought, and Campy mentioned, he said that team can really guard and they're so long, they're athletic and they're physically, they're strong. You know, Townsend had just bullied his way to the basket against guys. Then they put Quincy Gray on him, and he just bottled him up. I mean, he just shut him down. And then Terrence Shannon just chasing, you know, their shooter around screens. It was just fantastic to watch. I mean, just the way he closed out, and Ty Rogers did a great job. I mean, I thought overall their defense was just fantastic, and they basically didn't make mistakes. Early on, they made a couple scouting report mistakes. And then after that, it was like, it was hard. They had 8 points a minute and 25 seconds into the game.
Yeah.
And then after that, Illinois did a great job defensively, I thought, on them, really slowed them down. So, yeah, that last stretch was exactly what Brad Underwood loves to see. Now, would he like to see the offense be better? Of course. But, you know, but if you can, if they don't score, it makes a lot easier to win.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, that was probably, if you want to give a team a ball, it was the defense. It was on the defensive side. But you're right. At some point, you got to score points. You know, I'm not concerned about it because you saw the Kansas game. I'm pretty sure, you know, when they played Marquette, you know, they know how big their game is. They owe Marquette. You know, my thing is how are they going to handle that pressure the entire game. That's what I'm really curious to see. You know, how the young kids handle it. When you play a team like that, you can't leave points on the table. I think, you know, it didn't cost them the game, but I think the officiating was kind of tough. I know Quincy was really frustrated a couple of times because people keep making comments that, you know, I read on social media, missing layups. He was getting hit. And I think that frustrated him because he's been pretty solid down there. So, but overall, I mean, you – learn from this. You pick up things that, you know, you may see from another team, maybe in the tournament, maybe some team, you know, might throw a junk defense at you, and you've seen it. That's why you play these games.
Yeah, I do like the idea of, you know, they had to earn this one, and again, winning is what you want to have as your end result. I'm a little different than most people. I don't really care how you win a game. I'm not going to apologize for a W. If you win by one and you looked horrible, that's, nobody remembers that. They just remember you won the game. So, you know, that's where I kind of, you know, to me, it's like you got the W, and that's what we didn't get in some of those preseasons with John Gross, you know, is we didn't have, you know, we didn't have that end result of where your team gets the W at the end. And that's what I think Brad Underwood has brought to this, where you fight these games, and you might have an issue aesthetically with, oh, how did, you know, we didn't look as good, or we didn't do this. But if you get the W, I don't really care how it looks. So,
well, Mike, if you really think about it, look at the Minnesota Illinois football game last week. End of the day, it was a 1-point game. It's a W in the win column.
Yep. And nobody cares that it's a 1-point game. So, Brad, any final thoughts to wrap up, or any thoughts on Marquette in terms of that, for what our subscribers and listeners will be looking at next Tuesday night? And we're all excited about that game.
Well, Marquette's obviously really good, coming off a great season. I'll be honest with you, much like I said about Kansas being the number one team in the country, I don't think Marquette's probably the fifth best team in the country, but they're very good. And so, but I think Illinois has matches up fairly well, have a chance to win this game if they play well. You know, when Illinois, I think that there's, when Illinois shoots the ball well, like they did against Kansas, basically they can beat anybody. I don't put that in my mind. Maybe, you know, and so that's where I think what we're looking for. It's going to be a different mindset, different energy. They're going to come out. I thought they played hard tonight. I think they'll have a different level in this game. The one thing I will say, I don't love sometimes the starting lineup mix. I wish maybe it was a little bit different at times. And so, you know, we'll see. I think after Marquette, that's when you start experimenting.
What would you do different, Brad?
Well, so in my mind, I actually like bringing maybe more, having more offense to start the game. and then bringing in those energy guys off the bench. I feel like, you know, and I'm not saying he's clearly not a better player, but I think having a guy like Dane Danger to start, where you can throw a ball in the post once or twice early and get maybe a foul trouble, get post touch. Remember the Bulls back when Jordan played, you know, early in the game, they would establish Bill Cartwright or Bill Wennington even, or Luke Longley. They'd throw it in the post to them. First few possessions just to get, because it opens, it's inside. It gets those guys involved, and then they feel like they're involved in the game. And I just really like that, you know, coming out, and maybe it's putting a Luke Goody in the starting lineup to get him, you know, get him an open shot here or there. But I'd like to see maybe a different mix, because then you have your guys like Harmon and Gibbs Lawhorn and, you know, whatever, maybe it's Quincy Gray off the bench to be that, those energy guys to just come in with that, you know, athleticism and that 100% effort, you know. I don't know. That might be my change, but I really like what they can do. Brad Underwood, I asked him a question about this, how it changes game plan going into these games when he doesn't really know who is going to close the game or who's going to be on the floor. I mean, he used to know it was Io was going to be on the floor. Trent was going to be on the floor. Kofi was going to be on the floor. You know, whoever it was, they knew who their five guys to close the game were. Now you've looked at, you know, whether it's Kansas or this EIU game or, you know, this game tonight, you didn't know who was going to be in there in key moments, because it changed every game based on matchups and based on what fit. So I think that's where it's kind of fun, because you don't, I can't tell you which guys are going to play well against Marquette, but what I can tell you is Brad Underwood, whichever guys are playing well are going to end up in the game. And I think that's a great plus that Illinois has.
The Dane Danger experiment, I like most of us, I'm kind of surprised he didn't start to begin with. I surprised a lot of us. It's not just the three of us. There's a lot of media guys, you know, that have talked about it, and some of my colleagues. But, you know, and I don't know, you know, I get what Brad is doing. I mean, I like the offense, but you're right. You know, there's something to getting a post touch, and, you know, when things aren't going well, because, yeah, Coleman is 6'10", but that's not his game. That's just not, he's not a bruiser down low, and Dane commands that. I mean, so I would like to see that, but my concern moving forward with what I'm, you know, for Tuesday against Marquette, that pressure for a whole game. I remember a couple of years ago when I went to Marquette, they did a good job, but a lot of teams were down. The one advantage Illinois is going to have this time is that home court advantage, because you turn the ball over against them, they're going to make you pay for it. I do think Illinois can match up with any team. I like what they can go small, they can go big, they go fast, they can run. I just know that this week, Ty Rogers, Marcus Domask, Drayvon Gibbs Lawhorn. I mean, I would put, you know, have them guard, you know, two guys guard them, and, you know, maybe three, and I'd put maybe 6-8 guys on the court, because it's not going to be easy for them. I mean, this is going to be pressure that they haven't seen in a long time.
Finally, I feel like we should at least talk about it for a couple minutes, but Brad, what are your thoughts on the whole Jim Harbaugh suspension? And then, of course, it really appears like Michigan has learned from Kansas, and they're going to try to delay this thing and get it moved out, which at some point, you know, people lose interest. And you know, basically the same scandal that cost Oklahoma State coaches their jobs, you know, was just a attaboy for Bill Self and company in Kansas. And it looks like, you know, fighting the NCAA seems to be the way to go. And Michigan appears to have learned that lesson.
Yeah. But the one thing is they're fighting the Big Ten, right? This is more of a Big Ten suspension.
Yeah. Right. Although the NCAA is coming. Yes. But yeah.
So here's my thought. I don't like it. I don't think they should have suspended him at this point. I think it should have been something that they investigate, they go through all the due process, they get all the stuff in order, and probably you either after the season is when it happens, because I don't know, you know, I don't know from my standpoint, do I think he's guilty? Yeah. But I think everybody deserves their day, like their due process. I think everybody deserves their day to meet and have your, you know, your day in court, for lack of a better term. So I don't know if I like the way it was handled here from that answer. Now, do I think they're guilty? I do. I think they did it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like they should have had a chance to go through that and go through the offseason. Now, from the maybe from Big Ten's perspective was, hey, if he misses these three games and then he's back for the Big Ten championship should they win and the college football playoff. And so maybe, but I mean, they're almost like an upset. You're almost giving Michigan like martyrdom for this, and you're allowing them to be us against the world. You know, everybody hates us kind of mentality. And I just think, like, you know what, you're just giving them more ammo. I think waiting until the offseason, letting it hang over their head, has probably been a more punishment than doing what they're doing.
I have a little bit different take on it. I will agree with this part, you know, let the process play itself out. But my take is, if they knew they did it, which obviously they did, I think the Big Ten had to do something. You can't sit and let him play out the season. Michigan has a chance of winning a national title. I mean, they put themselves in a position to do that. And to me, rewarding them, I mean, it's cheating. I don't want anybody to tell me anything any differently, because if that was a mid-tier team like an Illinois or Minnesota, you know, hell, they want to throw the death penalty at them. Because it's Michigan and who they are, they're not above the law. They're not better than anybody else to me. There has to be some kind of consequences. And I do think the NCAA, I think now, knowing the fact what Michigan did, they probably won't do much more, if that makes any sense. But you can't, as a conference, allow things like that to happen. And from what we all know, this, you know, they've known about this for years. Pat Fitzgerald has talked to coaches about it. So this has been going on. And to me, it's a bad look. You know, the conference is always just being scarred from Pat Fitzgerald, from Northwestern. I mean, it's always something. And Michigan didn't have to do that. I know there was pressure for, I call them khaki pants, from Jim Harbaugh to win games, to beat Ohio State. But, you know, because he was on the hot seat. I mean, you know, let's face it, he was. But they still had enough talent to go out to compete than doing what they did.
Yeah. Can I get one follow-up? I got a question for
you. Sure.
Okay. Here's my take. I don't know that three-game suspension is severe enough for what they did, should they prove it to be true.
I agree, Brad. I agree.
That's why I think now a three-game suspension, really, I mean, yeah, I mean, it hurts them, obviously, but at the same time, I think he should be fired. If this is true and they go through and they know that it's true and they know he was involved, then I think he should be fired. And so my question is, why not go through the process and do what needed to be done, as opposed to just almost like placating everyone who was involved in this? So that was my thought.
The season was what I should have said, because me personally, I would have done it for the season, not just the regular season. He should not be allowed to coach the rest of the year. I don't think so. I just, even if it was an Illinois guy, I would say the same thing. But I know how the court of law works. You know, we're seeing it on a national level. He deserves his chance, but it's cheating. And to me, I would, you know, and I don't know if they would fire him, because, you know, I've seen things tonight. You know, we have our little group text about them wanting to leave the Big Ten. Okay. You know what? Look who the Big Ten's bringing in. That's not going to hurt. I'm sorry. That is not going to hurt the Big Ten. People may disagree. There's so many other great teams coming into the conference. Yeah, you'll lose the Ohio State and Michigan rivalry, you know, Michigan rivalry, but they'll be stupid to do that. He made the mistake. There has to be some kind of consequences. I don't know if they think that he should go get a salad or something from McDonald's or Hardee's or Wendy's, but there has to be consequences.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I hesitate on doing something in the middle of a season unless you have a smoking gun. I also think that, like politics, you know, if you recall back all the way back into the Lethal Weapons movie, the one with the where they had the guy from South Africa, you know, plausible deniability, and a leader who says, I didn't know what was going on in my organization, to me, is in a different way, is just as bad as a leader who cheats, because if you're the head coach and your coordinators are in deep with a guy who's doing what this guy has done and you don't know about it, then I don't know, that to me almost may, are you stupid or are you just pretending like you don't know? And now everybody's lying. So they can, I mean, again, if he really didn't know, then that's kind of pathetic from a leadership standpoint that you don't know what's going on at all in your program. And if you've cheated, I guess I can actually respect the cheating a little more because at least you're trying to win. But I will say they're not going to go.
You ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Tarkanian, you know, there's 9 out of 10 teams are cheating and the 10th one's in last place. But ultimately, I just think, you know, it's one of those things where you probably have to wait and get all the evidence and do it the right way. And if they win the whole national title, then they're just going to be, they may be an asterisk and you can't ever truly take it away. But, you know, we've all seen what happens when a program gets bombed for doing nothing. And it's not a good feeling. And I wouldn't wish that on any or, you know, program. But we've seen what happened, you know, when Illinois in 1967 was giving out $4, you know, to a guy to have a pizza when some very great coaches were dropping off cars to players and Illinois turned themselves in the slush fund and got nuked from orbit by the NCAA. And then you also saw in the early 90s when Bruce Pearl clipped together a tape and Bobby Knight and Digger Phelps walked around the Big Ten headquarters and, you know, made sure, or excuse me, walked around NCAA headquarters and made sure that Illinois got a probation when the opening line of the press conference was Mike Slive, the former, you know, the SEC commish, you know, who started off with something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing here, but although we couldn't prove any of Illinois' allegations, the number of allegations against them makes us bring lack of institutional control, and Illinois, you know, missed their opportunity to move up into the Blue Bloods. So we've seen these things when they're stacked against a university, and I'm not saying they are or aren't against Michigan. But for the Michigan fans who want to act like you're a victim, pick up a history book or pick up, you know, go educate yourself before you look like a moron, because you don't have any idea what it's like to have your program decimated for doing very little. And this one, it was clear that this Connor Stallions guy was going way overboard. And the best case out of this is, get headsets so that we can come into the modern era. There's no reason why the quarterbacks and a player on the defense can't have a helmet that allows them to talk with their coach and call plays. And then you don't have to worry about that ridiculous scene where Rutgers has 4 different colors of guys wearing sweatshirts with an R on it and looking like a dance team on the sidelines next to the coaches. So, yeah, I just had to get your guys' view on that. I'm sure we will all be talking about that quite a bit. And Brad, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is on Eye on the Illini last week, and we put a clip up on YouTube. I wanted to ask you, is Illinois a rival of Indiana's in basketball? Because apparently Indiana fans don't think they are.
I mean, I think there was a time when there was a little bit of rivalry, when, especially back in like 89, that era when, you know, Henson and Knight were kind of going back and forth and, you know, but I don't know that they're really rivals now. I think that only for the people, I think it's like Illinois and Missouri. If you live in St. Louis or Southern Illinois, down by St. Louis, Illinois and Missouri are massive rivals. If you live in the area between Champaign and Bloomington, probably Indiana and Illinois and that East Central Illinois and down, you know, they're big rivals. If you're an Illinois person up in Chicago, you probably look at Northwestern as a rival because those are the people you run into. But I don't know. If I'm picking a rival, it's Iowa. I think Iowa's the legit rival for Illinois in basketball. I think there's a lot of animosity there. So that'd probably be my pick.
Yeah. I look at Indiana as being up there, and I do like the way they try to act like, oh yeah, it's not a rivalry. It never has been. Why would we care about you guys? And it's like, I think Illinois
haven't been good enough to do that. I mean,
since 87.
Yep. No question. Even when they were good there, you know, they did have a Final Four or two, but I mean, the last time they made the Final Four was what? 2000, was it 2002? 2000.
Might have been the one. Did Crean make it all the way there? Were they were baffled and bewildered by a 2-3 zone?
I think they lost before that.
Okay, that was before that. Okay.
I think it was Mike Davis was the last one, wasn't he?
Okay, it might have been. Yeah, it's been. I mean, it's been a while. Yeah. Not that Illinois is guilty of.
Illinois is not good either.
The John Gross era was not good for anyone fighting Illini. Yeah.
Except John Gross's bank account.
Yeah, very, very good. Very good. Yes, yes. So, folks, we're going to put this, we'll have this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And what you'll see is after the Indiana game, we will be doing our real quick recap, and then we will also do our full analysis later on. So we'll have two podcasts on Saturday, the 11th. And we certainly want to, you know, invite you to turn that on. And of course, next week we will have our Iowa preview, which will have Mark Randazzo from the Quad Cities, who will give us the scouting report on the Hawkeyes. And then we will be going in, and we've got a Sturdy for 30 coming out on the overall Big Ten basketball. And then we have a variety of stuff coming out, you know, to support both football and basketball next week. So, you know, it's going to be crazy. Check your podcast feed. And if you're ever going to subscribe, this is the time. For $99. You'll be keeping up on the basketball team. Both men's and women's are in the top 25. The football team's trying to make a run for a bowl. All the recruiting information that's going on. There is a ton. This is the time to subscribe to IlliniGuys.com. We will talk to you on Saturday. Go Illini!